Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us once again on Queensbury Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensburyRules.com, and shortly I shall be joined by James Foley of BadLeftHook.com, and of course, Brian Campbell of ESPN, which should be pretty awesome. I think that's James here. James?
Patrick?
Yes, sir.
You're not going to try to slap me, are you?
No, although we will have a word from our sponsors about that later on. And actually, I think Campbell's already jumping on here, so let's get this guy on.
Uh-oh.
Campbell?
This is Campbell. I'm here.
Yes. Ready to play thumb sticks?
My two favorite bloggers in the whole world.
Oh.
My homeboy.
I don't know if that's really a good thing, but, you know, we'll take that.
Nice. What I missed so far? I know I'm like 10 seconds late. What's going on?
Oh, yeah, well, you missed a lot of action.
You missed us saying hello.
Okay.
Hugging. You know, you missed a little bit.
I love this week because there's nothing to talk about. Once we get through the fact that Foley didn't watch Friday Night Fights, there's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, there's nothing after it. We could just stop the show right now, actually. That's all I wanted to come on and say is that Foley doesn't watch anything.
I mean, what does he do on Friday nights instead? What do you think?
Tax auditing?
Yeah, something
nerdy. I don't know.
That's
just
like
a guest. Just a guest.
A taxonomy?
Doctor said I need a taxiotomy?
Yeah, no.
Taxing that ass? I don't know.
I
That's the only other
know,
tax.
I'm like a 75% viewer on Friday Night Fights. I don't even know where this comes from. I miss the occasional show, but... I attended about three Friday Night Fights last year.
What's funny is that you probably have attended more live Friday Night Fights than I have. Seriously, I'm not even kidding.
Chicago is prime territory. Chicago is prime FNF territory. Just get a Polish guy on the card, whatever you have to do.
Yeah,
yeah,
I
that's pretty much.
There's something left of Andre Fanfara after Donna Stevenson, you know, so he can continue to be the biggest draw here.
Well, your guy Spielka should roll back onto that soon, right?
Yeah, I think Spielka didn't disgrace himself. He did enough. He'll be back.
And Foley, what's up with you and the Gumbel brothers always calling it Chicago? You know,
I never said what's up with me saying that. I didn't say that.
All Chicago people are always like, you know, and this week in Chicago.
Are the Gumbel brothers from Chicago?
They have to be because they always say it. Are they even brothers?
That's another good question. I don't know, man. There's also the like Chicago pronunciation.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah. All right, let's do it. Let's do this Blog Talk Radio. Let's do this jam.
So, boxing. Yeah.
Is there still boxing after the death of Face Lube a couple weeks ago?
Oh, that's just sadness for all of us, isn't it?
Yeah, that was pretty rough. I took that pretty hard.
Yeah, that was harsh. I
yes,
think,
pause.
Would you guys say, though, I mean, we might have the closest thing to Face Lube in terms of comic potential coming up in a couple weeks with Chavez Jr.
You know, he is entering into that wild card category. There's no way. Well, he's already there. What are we talking about? He's already there. Great call, Foley.
Yeah, I mean,
aside from, you know, between the psychotic faces on Face Off and the, you know, the kind of like, I just slept with your sister, you caught me doing it, and I don't give a shit, psychotic faces, between those and eating cereal and his mantis, I mean, he's got to be up there.
He needs to be initiated fully into that club, which means he needs some kind of bizarre in-ring meltdown, like a nude man running through the ropes or some guy parachuting in or the fight
that's
ending.
That's it,
because,
a new
you know,
fan man.
That's yeah,
what
he
we,
needs
that's
some,
what boxing needs.
I mean, short of a face tattoo, Chavez needs to do something to really enter into that rarefied air of just must-see train wreck.
Yeah, that's tops right there. We need that. We need it. His career needs it.
Well, I think it's another one of those where we'll, you know, I mean, it's hard not to root for Vera, and he definitely, I think, got screwed in terms of just, I don't think the judges gave him a fair shake, even though I thought it was actually a much closer fight than most people did the first fight. But, you know, it is probably better for boxing in terms of future matchups if Chavez can get back on track.
You know, Vera's, I think, a pretty likable guy, you know, being serious for a minute. He's a pretty likable guy. In the first fight, I tend to agree. I think that it was a pretty clear win for Vera, but it wasn't like a runaway win. Like, he won every single round, and he kind of – there were rounds there where he kind of allowed Chavez to, like, you know, make a case for winning some rounds, you know what I mean? And so that left the door open for the scoring, as bad as it was. You know, as much as I disagreed with it, I thought that he kind of did leave a little bit of a door open there. So I'm interested to see what happens in a couple weeks with that, but, you know.
There's one small angle that doesn't get touched, though, is the fact that I actually give Chavez a little bit of credit for gutting that out. Like, we knew the Texas judges would probably bail him out, but to put himself in that spot, because he realized early he was in no kind of shape to actually come out and win that fight, so he actually adjusted from sort of that crazy stalking mentality and became sort of a one-punch-at-a-time sniper. And, you know, he was only using his right hand and was sort of just setting up Vera for that one shot here and there. And it was so interesting to sort of see him fall into that role. And, the only thing that led him to that role was being a fat slob. But it was interesting that he sort of had the adjustment qualities where he didn't just rely on Gail Van Hoy like normally guys do in Texas.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, it was an interesting fight to score. I thought the sentiment was so anti-Chavez because of all of his antics with the weight and everything going into it that I really do think there was a lot of bias in the viewing scorecards, like the Twitter crowd giving Vera pretty much the benefit of the doubt every single round in a few cases that I thought were close rounds. Because I saw most of the scores I saw were like 7-3 or 8-2 for Vera. And, of course, the judges went, you know, way in the other direction. I mean, I really do believe, I think the truth was somewhere in between. But it was a hard fight to score because Chavez was, you know, visibly landing the bigger punches, but they weren't really doing much of an effect. And, obviously, Vera was much busier and, you know, landed more punches. But like you said, I mean, it was just a circus of a fight. I mean, Chavez was in terrible shape. He looked like shit. And he was just gigantic compared to Vera. And, you know, had blown off all of the weight agreements. So I don't know what to expect. I mean, I kind of feel like the conventional wisdom, you know, if Chavez does get his shit together and trains better, that he should be able to, you know, clearly beat Vera in the rematch.
If he can return to that level, yeah.
I thought that, you know, Campbell, you brought up a pretty decent point there, and it kind of almost reminded me a little bit of Lennox Lewis having to gut it out a little more than we thought he was going to against Vitaly Klitschko. Because he came in a, you know, not very good shape, and it obviously wasn't the exact same situation, but in other words, a fighter having to show something that maybe they before were being criticized for or hadn't previously shown because they came in no type of shape to fight and then wind up, you know, despite the bad scoring and despite the fact that, you know, you thought that Chavez Jr. should have won that, there still were kind of things that he showed during the fight that were kind of redeeming qualities, I should say. So, you know, that was kind of interesting. But, yeah, I also agree that, you know, what you said, James, is that because of the pre-fight stuff and because that everybody was fairly anti-Chavez going into the fight, that probably affected some of the scoring and also how some people viewed the fight and what had happened and, you know, Chavez, the bully, and the guy throwing his weight around, you know, literally and figuratively. So I'm not entirely sure what to expect coming into this fight, although it does worry me for Chavez that already when they were talking about rematch, they were talking about what weight is it going to be at. We're going to have to make it at a higher weight. And it was like, wait, what? At a higher weight? What? You know, so I don't really know exactly what to expect in that regard, and I hope that Chavez doesn't basically trash whatever goodwill he has left.
Well, it's 168, right? I mean, for now.
For now.
Until Chavez changes his mind next week.
Yeah, for now.
Well, he's the best 173-pound fighter in the world, and until somebody else proves that, I really don't see any reason why Chavez should get off of that number right now.
He's undefeated at the weight. Well, it's controversial, but he is technically undefeated.
But, you know,
it's like
back...
Go
it's like
it,
Hopkins, you know, making Winky Wright fight at 175 pounds, you know, and then they start calling that Winky weight, you know.
It's just good that Vero, who, like James said, such a good guy, good that he's getting this, because how easy would it have been for Chavez to just say, F off, you know, I'm fighting Frotch next, who cares about this, I got through this, survive in advance. We do have to stop and just sort of say, hey, boxing, you know, way to clean up at least one of your black eyes once in a while, you know, clean up on aisle A, just way to put that back together, because here was a guy who did deserve it, so that's good to see.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely did enough to warrant the rematch. But, and, you know, Chavez just, he squandered all of the goodwill that he had from the, you know, the heroic last stand against Martinez. And it's kind of a, you know, I look, you know, there's always the comparisons between Chavez and Canelo, the two rising Mexican superstars, and they both got their, you know, huge mega fights against, like, the, you know, pound-for-pound best fighters and the best guys in their division. And I think Chavez actually, at the time, came away better, you know, than Canelo did from those two fights. I mean, Canelo just completely shut out by Mayweather, barely had a – I don't think he did have a good moment in the entire fight, you know, or any kind of significant moment. And, you know, the lasting memory of Chavez was putting Martinez on the ground twice. But, you know, everything that happened after that and the suspension for marijuana and being gone for a year and coming in just not being focused, not getting into shape, and obviously, you know, not taking the Vera fight seriously at all, and then looking like crap and getting in the... So he's got a way to go to rebuild his reputation, whereas Canelo, you know, immediately is coming right back in a pretty tough, interesting fight.
True, and it's also hard to try to gauge how many strikes Chavez has left. But you would think if he lost this one, it would just be, you know, it would just be devastating, right? I mean, there's a good deal amount on the line for this fight.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Frotch fight and the Golovkin fight and anything like that is all out of the question.
Well, and on top of that, I mean, another little kind of factor to think about is that we know for sure the attendance for the first Vera-Chavez fight was not that good. And the ratings weren't that good. I mean, they weren't terrible, but they weren't that good. And so now, moving forward, it kind of seems as though if you were going to be comparing the two between Canelo Alvarez and Chavez Jr., that Canelo kind of seems to have the upper hand, or, you know, the hearts and minds of boxing folks, rather than, you know, in comparison to Chavez. You know what I mean? I think that a lot of people are kind of just getting sick of the act.
No question, and Canelo's surely the more polished fighter, takes it more seriously. But don't you just get the feeling, though, to the fans, though, that because of that 12th round stand, Chavez is more Mexican to them? So that's where the fact of how many strikes he's always going to have with the critics and the fans alike, because, like you mentioned, James, Canelo just didn't do anything. He didn't have one good moment except for when he was purposely fouling Floyd, which showed me at that point that, oh, this guy, you know, he's not too small for the moment. He knows what's going on. But it led to nothing.
Yeah.
So it meant nothing in the end. He made no adjustment, and he proved that he wasn't ready for prime time, whereas Chavez, who's just this bumbling mess, can lean on that 12th round and lean on his name still and just sort of pat himself on the chest, and people still almost want him to do better than they want Canelo to do. Does that make that up? Does that make any sense?
Well, I mean,
I think it makes sense.
I don't know what, you know, I'm not sure being down, I can't really speak for what, you know, what the people in Mexico think, but, I mean, Canelo is definitely much more of a boxer, and Chavez showed that he is willing to take a lot of punishment, and he happens to have, you know, an amazing chin, so he's going to be involved in some wars. I mean, if he fought Golovkin, you know, can you imagine the kind of artillery that's going to have to come out to actually knock Chavez out and knock him down? I mean, eventually, take enough punishment, yeah, he's probably going to crack, but I think he definitely, you know, along with Brandon Rios, has one of the best chins, and that means that he, you know, and because he's not a great boxer, and he seems like he's wanted to kind of, you know, punch his opponents out for the most part instead of, you know, box them to a points win. I mean, he's going to be involved in some really good fights, and that will endear him to fans. But, you know, ultimately, I mean, I think between him and Canelo, I mean, it kind of depends, you know, how – I mean, right now I think Canelo's viewed as a better fighter even after the Mayweather loss, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, Chavez, against what he looked like against Vera, and the fact that he's been out of the ring for so long. But, you know, you can't – I mean, outside of that one fight. But, you know, that was a significant moment when he made that stand in the 12th. I mean, he really showed a lot in terms of just you know, that he was getting absolutely, I mean, really beaten up in there, taking a really vicious beating, and he never gave up, and he gave himself a chance to win, and he was skilled enough to do it, you know, and he had enough power to actually hurt Sergio. And even though Sergio's been down a lot, you know, most of the time it's a balance thing. And that was the first time I had really seen him, you know, hurt, wobbled, I mean, barely able to survive. And it was one of the best moments of that year. So he really, really has failed to capitalize on that so far. And a lot of it's just his own lack of professionalism.
But you can always fall back on size, chin, and power. You can't teach any of those three. And he's always going to have that to fall back on. So you get the feeling that the chances, when you mix that with his name, he's never going to run out of chances.
Yeah. And then, but the devil's advocate would say, though, that he does have all that, but is it only when he can kill himself to make a weight that is unnatural for him?
True.
And he can rehydrate 20 pounds, you know, like how good is his chin going to be if he has to fight as a light heavyweight and he has to run into a Kovalev? I mean, that's when we'll find out. But, yeah, it looks like he has a pretty amazing – I mean, I think Martinez has proven power at middleweight and, barely made Chavez flinch, even though he, you know, completely beat his ass and bruised him really very badly. he was never mentally, out of it.
Yeah, amazing that he never broke down mentally, not even an inch.
Yeah, it's crazy. Because that was just a virtuoso performance from Sergio. I mean, hitting him from every single angle with every punch that he had for 11 and a half rounds.
And he fought full speed for 11 and a half rounds because he had to keep him away that much. That's what I really respect. And that's unfortunately lost in the 12th round. You really lose that. We lose respecting what Sergio did, even though it's a whole other topic. But
no, I respect it. But yeah, you're right.
Well, I mean, I think that it's kind of surprising because if you look at where Chavez Jr. was, even maybe, I don't know, 2 to 3 years ago, he was still largely, the butt of a joke. He was just Julio Cesar Chavez's son. That's pretty much all he was a couple of years ago, even though he was being pushed towards the kind of boxing mainstream, if there is such a thing anymore, that they were trying to make him a name, and they were trying to sell the idea that he was an actual fighter and not just Julio Cesar Chavez's son. And so I think that even, especially if you look at that, he's come a long way in the last few years as far as being considered an actual fighter, you know, a respectable fighter. And that 12th round against Sergio Martinez, that had a lot to do with it, I'd have to say, because for the first 10 and a half rounds, it was basically like, all right, well, this guy just doesn't really belong in the ring with Sergio Martinez, And that's fine. He was the middleweight champ, whatever. It happens. But then, of course, right there at the kind of like halfway through the 11th round, at the end of the 11th round, it was like, whoa, 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 what's happening? And then in the 12th round, everybody shit their pants. So that had a lot to do with it, I'd have to say. He's getting some mileage out of that 12th round, even now, almost a year and a half later. Regardless, this is, like you said, Mr. Campbell, this is pretty much must win for Chavez Jr. He's got to find some way to put it together here. And if he doesn't, I think that, he'll still get fights. He's still Chavez's son. But as far as him being an actual elite competitor, the jig might be up.
Yeah, no question about it. You think he's done completely at 160? You think we can say that we'll never see him again?
It's like breaking a seal. I don't know how he's going to get back down. Know what I mean? I don't see any reason for him to, really.
Yeah, I can't see it. I mean, it's like pretty amazing that he even made that weight ever.
I thought it was pretty amazing when he was up. Remember when he was first doing those small level pay-per-views? And he was a welterweight, and it was just obscene how tall he was.
That's true.
It was just ridiculous. There was the hope that he would stay there and be like this freak Paul Williams, but with muscles and who can punch even more. But, 160 is out of the question, and his name obviously is going to, not warrant the need to go back down because there's not going to be anybody with a bigger name than him to make that. But, like you said, James, I just question where his effectiveness would be at 175. So I hope he at least can stay around the 68 window if he can get past Vera and really keep himself around, because obviously him versus anyone is a great fight, and I think there's a good deal of pay-per-views he can find himself in even if he keeps losing them.
Yeah, there's without question, he'll still get the opportunities for sure.
Where did you guys – what was your guys' opinion about Frotch taking – you know, Frotch Groves 2 versus Frotch Chavez? Which one of those would you rather see?
Go ahead, Brian.
There's no question that I wanted to see Frotch step away from that Groves situation, and it's sort of against what I believe in, you know. So am I justifying wanting to see Frotch not go back and avenge that, you know, and take care of that situation just because he's old and I want to see him in big fights? Yeah, no question about it. I'd rather see Frotch against Chavez or Frotch against Golovkin, you know. There's no question. But all in all, you know, when he did take it, I respect him. You can't not respect Carl Frotch. I mean, he just brings it, you know. He just brings it in every category.
He's with Rachel accordingly.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean,
you have to respect him.
Everything about him, you can't not respect it. So, Groves is certainly, you know, this is the right thing that should have happened. You know, I'm glad it's happening. But, yeah, of course I'd rather see Frotch take on Chavez right now.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, at least from an action standpoint, from a standpoint of what's, you know, what's got the better potential to be a very good fight. And even aside from that, I'm totally fine with Frotch versus Chavez Jr. That's just the type of fight that I don't even know why anybody would not want. Although I do understand why some people were like, no, that's not fair. You know, George Groves deserves it. He should have gotten it. I mean, I think that there's just kind of a lot of little asterisks about that whole situation. You know, I mean, yes, George Groves did some impressive stuff early in the fight. It looked like he was fading. It looked to me like Frotch was going to get the stoppage, whether it was early or not. I know that's kind of a crappy argument to make, but that's how I saw it. And, you know, it seems like to me, the business is not as unfinished as many seem to make it out to be. You know what I mean? And George Groves has certainly done a really good job of selling that rematch to the media, and he deserves it. But I would have been all about that Chavez Jr. versus Frotch fight. There's no way that could have been bad.
No question. And maybe it's just me who thinks that was an off night for Frotch. I don't think it was, oh, look, he's old now. I just don't think he took Groves that seriously. I thought it was maybe too tough of a fight. We were kind of, on our side of the water, we were treating it as almost like this stay busy. Like, yeah, Groves is undefeated, but it was almost like, okay, get this one out of the way and move on. I know on their side of the water it meant much more, but I just feel like he's just going to come back and avenge it by knockout, you know, no questions asked. So to me it's this weird formality, but I know you have to go through with it because it's what's right.
Exactly. What do you think, James?
What are the odds if Frotch fought Chavez that Chavez winds up with Rachel? I'm thinking like 3-1, something like that.
I took your title. And I took your girl.
Exactly. Yeah.
Why are you talking about my
cereal together at 3 a.m.?
Yeah.
Well, if it's 3 a.m., I must be lonely, you know, baby.
Awesome. Oh, wait.
Yeah,
you know, before we get too much farther into some other subject, I just got to know the story about this. It was either James Bagg Jr. who was posting this picture of Campbell here, like doing some, some air karaoke or something like that in a bar. I got to know the story behind this.
Sadly, the story doesn't really hold up to how awesome the picture is, but there's actually a full photo spread from that night. It was right after I started at ESPN, and a bunch of the guys in my little crew there in my little department, we were working all nights and holidays, just, you know, we're essentially third shift, and it just rotating schedules, and it was just mayhem, and it was sort of, hey, if we ever can set up one night where everybody can be off, let's go out together and just blow it out. So we all dressed up in like old 70s suits, and we just went out and you know, on like a Monday night and just made things happen. And we ended up doing, instead of karaoke, we did air band. So everybody played an air instrument, including somebody as the band's manager. So it was, it's not a great story to retell, but it did happen.
I say that's a good story.
Where did James Bagg Jr. obtain that photo?
That's what I want to know.
Do you have any information as to the identity of Bagg Jr.?
I do not have information as to the identity of Bagg Jr., but I think he stole that from my Twitter account, maybe an early posting on Twitter when I first opened the account, but I think he took it from there.
Yeah, he is nefarious. I mean, he will, just copy those images.
Oh, he's an assassin, but right now... He's the current MVP of Twitter right now. Would you say that?
He's pound for pound. Yeah, one of the guys, definitely.
I love me some Romero at Blogger Boxing. And that guy is a star, and he's on the rise. But right now, Bag Jr. is Mayweather.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I'd have to say so.
You know, and Ramiro and Bag are kind of like ultimate boys right now. And at some point, I'd kind of like to see like a falling out, and then the next great Twitter beef.
That's a great storyline right there.
Now, I've been trying to basically hassle the Transnational Boxing Ranking Board about putting James Bagg Jr. number one. Because I'm kind of sick of this shit, to be honest. You know, I mean, it's getting a little ridiculous.
Dude, Bagg is having a month like we haven't seen on Twitter, though. I mean, between the Glazer and the Moe, I mean, he's just on a roll right now.
Yeah, he is. He's killing it.
And we just got called out on Twitter for feeding the trolls. I say keep feeding them.
Dude, feed that crap.
Hell yeah.
Bag Glazer was probably the best fight of the year.
No.
Although I haven't seen the cell phone footage from Saturday night's altercation. But
yeah, what's going on there? True. You want to break that down, PC?
Nah, we don't know.
Nah,
we
don't.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's funny you guys mentioned it. I didn't really want to talk about this whole shit, but I was approached, and I was approached to basically do a sponsor spot on our show. And so if you guys can hold on for a minute, I just wanted to do a word from our sponsors. Okay, you guys ready?
Go for it.
Exist many names for these demons. Press Row Predators, Boxing Writing Barbarians, Media Monstrosities. They attend boxing cards, disguised as impartial observers, but lay in wait for their next helpless victim. Needless to say, boxing scribing just got real. Get ready to be slapped with the latest sensational boxing film to absolutely stun the Academy of Films about boxing writers who assault each other while covering fight cards. This summer, experience colossal titan of boxing media, Colossus Leviathan.
Okay, thank you guys so much for being patient. You know, we just had to slip that in. We're being paid for this stuff, so you know, we got to make money somehow. You know, don't blame me. Okay,
it's dangerous on Press Row.
Hey, it's one way to improve Top Rank undercards, though. If you ask me, you know,
I agree. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I would rather have watched that unfold. No matter, I mean, if it's 90 seconds on YouTube from a cell phone, I'd rather watch that than probably every fight on that card.
Oh, come on. Shawnee Monaghan Caputo Smith was a pay-per-view undercard classic, you know? Anything but that one.
That's true.
If Andy Ruiz Jr. is not on an undercard, I don't watch it. It's really that simple.
I mean, I'm just thinking, like, I like Jesse Magdaleno. I liked, you know, I forget what else was on that card on Saturday night. Or Diego Magdaleno. I mean, I like those guys. I'm happy to watch them. But if I had to choose, I mean, I think this is – I mean, I really think a boxing promoter is missing out because there's just a lot of tension that could be resolved, you know.
Well, remember that cool run we had in the early 2000s with the celebrity boxing? I mean, it was awful, but it was – you couldn't turn away. Remember that?
It was
even on Fox for a while. It was like Vanilla Ice and Willis from different strokes.
Manute Bol versus William Perry.
Oh, it was a full-on trainer.
Yeah, they had Manute Bol versus William Perry. Oh, Jesus.
And you remember they threatened that they would take away the purse of both if Manute Bol didn't start throwing punches?
The guy is nine foot tall
and 13 pounds. What do you want
him? I thought Bol won that fight, though.
Well, he was just trying to raise money, and he was just trying to keep him away with the jab. But, yeah, that was a train wreck. There was no engaging going on.
No. Not at all.
That's too bad.
But, yeah, just, you know, people keep in mind that movie is coming out this summer. And so buy tickets because it'll help us. So Campbell, what is your early-ish take on Tim Bradley versus Manny Pacquiao 2?
First of all, I absolutely love this fight, and I'm, like, appalled that people have issue with it. You know, that fans aren't just, like, I mean, you know, we know we're not seeing Mayweather against these guys, which is just absolutely ridiculous. And I'm you know, like the hamster wheel goes around. Sometimes we get really mad about this, and other times we're like, yeah, that's just boxing. And other times we're like, I'm sick of talking about it. Well, the wheels come back around again, and I'm back into my rage zone again, where I'm like, how the heck is this guy Mayweather not fighting Bradley or Pacquiao? But that's a whole other topic. So since that fight's not happening, these are two top 5 pound for pound guys with a built-in storyline in the rematch. I mean, so much has changed since their first fight. I absolutely love this fight, and I have these strong feelings coming from deep inside of me that Bradley's going to win. I think he's a better fighter right now.
Well, okay, I mean, first of all, first part of this question is how did you score the first fight? And the second part of the question, I would say, is do you think that however you had the fight scored, my guess is that it was different than how the judges had the fight scored. And so do you think that Tim Bradley came away from that fight having learned enough to do something different in the second fight?
I think it's a collection of everything he learned from his that fight and his two after that. I had that fight like everybody else. I think I had it 9-3, and I may have adjusted it, you know, like you. You know, afterwards you watched it once with the volume down, once underwater, once with your pants off, once with peanut butter smeared across the screen. And after taking into all those watches combined, I think I gave Bradley one more round, maybe made it 8-4. But the thing that I remember most about that, and I think I tweeted it or put it into our ESPN live chat, around the 7th or 8th round, I remember saying, it's a shame that Bradley's going to lose this fight dominantly one-sided on the scorecards, because he's giving forth an incredible effort, not just overcoming the injuries, but he's really, really pushing the pace. Now, I don't look back at that fight and pretend to be Brian Kenny or Thomas Hauser and be like, well, you know, Bradley deserved it. If you know, he didn't deserve it. He deserved to lose that. But I think in the fight since then, he's gained more confidence by going through hell against Provodnikov. And then the fact that he wasn't damaged from that, and he came out with that type of performance, that brilliant type of performance against Marquez, to even though it was a close fight, it was a clear win in my mind. I think he's just a better fighter, and I don't think Manny is necessarily the same as he was coming into their first fight.
Yeah.
And I know Foley's all about Pacquiao, so go ahead, Foley.
No, I'm not all about him. I mean, Pacquiao is a huge question mark still, definitely. But I think he looked as good as you could expect against Rios. And, you know, I mean, it's going to be a tough fight to pick.
A great fight. How even is this fight? It's crazy, right?
Yeah. Which is weird, because most of the time in a rematch situation, when the first fight was pretty clear-cut in most of our minds, you know, you would lean that same way. But, I mean, a lot of people, most people, I think, are kind of going for Bradley because of what you said. I mean, we've seen Pacquiao just get brutally knocked out. You know, I thought he, the speed and, you know, his hand speed, his boxing skill, everything still looked to be there against Rios, but he did seem a bit tentative. I mean, he didn't really, and maybe some of that's just psychological on me, you know, knowing that the guy's just been knocked out brutally and kind of, you know, looking more closely and thinking that, okay, Pacquiao seems like he's more content to kind of avoid, you know, avoid damage. And, but I don't know. I mean, he's a huge question mark. I don't think Bradley, you know, has the power to be able to knock Manny out. But so, I'm leaning Pacquiao, I think. I mean, just having already seen the fight once. I mean, I do agree with you. I think Bradley, you know, mentally and confidence-wise is better than what he was going into the first fight. I think that as a fighter, yeah, if anything, he's better. He's probably improved and learned. And, you know, I thought he looked great against Marquez. But I do think, you know, stylistically, if Pacquiao is the same guy that he was against Rios, I think the fight is pretty similar to the first fight.
But there's one thing. And in that first fight, the reason why anyone would even try to believe that Bradley won was because Pac didn't fight full rounds, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing. But I thought he did fight, you know, every minute of the rounds against Rios.
True.
And so I have to question whether that against Bradley, it really was that he was having like leg cramps or something. I mean, that maybe there really was something that was causing him to be so selective, because I just don't believe that Bradley, I mean, considering the guys who Pacquiao's fought, I can't imagine that Bradley has that kind of a, you know, an arsenal that's going to make Pacquiao back off and try to fight only a minute around, you know, because of fear of what's coming back to him. I mean, I really think it's just there was something wrong with him. I don't know. It was a weird night. I mean, if you remember, there was that huge delay beforehand. Where he was in the dressing room and all that
game
stuff.
Game 7 of the Heat-Celtics was that night, right?
Yeah, right. Remember? Yeah, he was watching the NBA playoffs, and then he goes and he starts stretching his calves out.
Manny came to ESPN, what month are we now? Last year, yeah, before his last fight. Last summer. I got a chance to sit down and talk with him for about 15 minutes. And, you know, when you talk to Manny, if you talk to Manny on the phone or you see him in press conference, you know, he doesn't give you much to work with. I'm learning you got to break the ice. You got to slice that ice. So I sliced it with the Celtics. I'm like, you know, hey, Manny, you know, I'm a big Celtics fan. What do you think about this year with the big three gone and all that crap? Well, he just lit right up. So we're just talking about the Celtics back and forth. He kept referring to them as this guy's Celtic. Like, he was pointing to Cons and them saying, this guy likes the Celtics too. Like, he was all like giddy, and it was great. So I brought up that, you know, I sort of referenced would they ever be the same, and I brought up that time before the Bradley fight, and he started laughing. He was like giddy, like giggling almost, like, yeah, ha, ha, ha. I couldn't leave until I saw the end of that game. I was so into it. So, I mean, like, dude, this is like a marquee fight, and you're holding up the whole world. So, yeah, clearly there was something off in him, and there's no question about that.
It was just
that's
so weird that we haven't seen that before.
That's hilarious because I don't know if you guys remember what they were actually talking about on the broadcast, but they were like, okay, we have a situation, we have a problem, because Manny Pacquiao has disappeared from his dressing room. Fred Roach says he cannot find him anywhere. He just disappeared from the treadmill, and people are like, is this a fucking hostage situation? Are there terrorists in the building? What's going on? You know, like, and it was like, he was watching basketball.
No, Lampley was angry, remember? Lampley, like, almost had that, like, how dare he hold us up type of thing going on. That was
Lampley
awesome.
Was fuming, Buffer was fuming. But yeah, they were cutting to that. They just cut to the camera shot of the empty hallway. Brilliant directing from Hirschman or from whoever.
And then the conspiracy theorists were like, oh, well, he pissed off the Vegas judges by making them wait.
Yeah.
Nobody makes CJ Ross wait, you know?
Well, yeah, nobody puts CJ Ross in the corner. That's true.
Well, Brian,
I think that's like the third show that I've made that reference, but go ahead.
Keep going.
Brian, since you brought up our mutual hero, Jim Lampley,
yes.
you might have to fire up that your tales of encounters with him.
I'll give you my favorite one about Golovkin. So
yeah, that's the one.
So I'd run into Lamps a few times, both times after Golovkin fights, and he's an impressive gentleman. He's a great guy. He was the one who actually approached me the first time I met him, said he told me, big fan of your work, as my jaw hits the floor. You know, he introduces himself like, hey, you know, Brian, it's Jim Lamps. Like, I have no idea. So it's a great guy. You know, he can't do wrong in my book at this point. But I see him after this is one of the great nights. I saw him after the Golovkin-Stevens fight. Of course, there's that famous establishment for boxing in New York City, Jimmy's Corner, you know, in Times Square, the great one. And there just happened to be a collection that night of everybody in the boxing world, which tends to happen a lot after fights. I mean, there was, like, even the West Coast were there, because Kim and Montoya were there. I mean, you know, Romero from Texas, Blogger Boxing was there. I mean, there was just full-on representation in this place. So I walk in, and this place is packed to the gills. Like, it's one of those that's so packed, it's a little hole in the wall, that you gotta rub chest and just total go full-on pause with any guy just to get past him, to get to the back of the place. So Lamps is coming out, and this is like the second or third time I've ever talked to him. So I'm all pumped up. The last time I had spoken to him was the last Golovkin fight, I think, and I was so giddy to talk to him. The only thing I had to say was, Jim, he's for real. Golovkin's for real. And he was like, oh, yes, he is for real. You know, like totally like that. So this time we're seeing him just after Golovkin gets past Stevens. And Golovkin's got this thing. I mean, we already know this. Golovkin's got this, like, this poor man's Tyson thing going. But there's this, you know, you get so excited. There was like a giddiness that filled the entire island of Manhattan after that fight. Everyone's just so giddy. So I walk into this place, and Lamps is coming up, and we go chest to chest because he's leaving, I'm coming in, and I grab him by the shoulder, and I go, Jim, he's for real, which was a reference to our last conversation. And he looks me in the eye with, like, this intensity, and he goes, he is the finest craft of any destroyer I have ever seen. You're damn right he's for real. And he taps me on the shoulder and turns and walks in the other direction. Almost like, and he had this long jacket on with a scarf. It was almost like a cape when the door opened up and the wind flew up. I thought he was going to fly off and just, you know, like It was just amazing. It was just one of those moments. And you know, we were all high on Golovkin at that moment to begin with, so that was just sort of like, you know, the topping point right there.
That was like his exit line. Right? Like,
that was the end of the movie.
Walked out the front door.
I could just imagine his ascot just flapping in the wind as the door is closing. That's just, oh, beautiful.
He's got a big ascot, too. Let me tell you about that.
Oh, nice ascot. Puffing on that little pipe. I'm just making shit up now, but that's just how I'm imagining it.
And then he jumped into a stretch Rolls Royce and went to the Eyes Wide Shut mansion.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think Schaefer and Aram were there?
Schaefer, definitely.
If we're going full conspiracy therapy, they both would have to be there, right?
It's like he opens the door and the limo driver just gets that, like, you know, that brief flash as the door's open before it's shut, and there's Schaefer, Aram, Lampley, and then there's, like, you know, the ghost of, like, Ray Robinson over on, like, dealing cards at the table. Yeah, that's exactly how it was.
Yeah, Lamps is the man.
Oh, he's the best.
That was pretty awesome. Of course, you know, my only cool story about Jim Lampley that's happened in the last few months was me running into him at a random La Jolla mall. But, you know, that's about it. He pretty much gave me this "who the hell are you" look. Probably
he didn't cry?
Beard. No, I think he cried because he saw my beard and was like, what kind of animal is living in there? That's about
it. Imagine if you could sop up his tears with your beard. That would just be like a full circle career moment right there.
He responded to Patrick like the way that he was acting during the Bo Galata riots. You're just like, hey, well, what are you doing there, guy? Hey, back up.
No, he
don't, you don't
want to
do that.
My beard. No, and actually, it's funny because he looked at my beard and he said, I think my daughter's down there somewhere. And he was talking about my beard because it just swallows shit up.
That's
but if I were able to soak up his tears with my beard, it would become a full-fledged talisman. I'll tell you that much. So I wish that would happen. Oh, man.
What else we got on the schedule coming up here?
You forgot to talk about the fight that I'm most excited about coming up. You got any guesses?
I don't know.
You're a huge Miguel Vasquez fan, but...
Nah, that kind fight doesn't give me a boner.
Oh,
come
you
got to
be most excited about Cotto Martinez, right?
No, guy. Vassal. Get out the Vassal, guy.
Oh, Lomachenko.
That's your boy?
I haven't officially anointed. I haven't, like, there was no ceremony. There was no, like, you know, no one, we didn't have to, there was no, I didn't have to burn, nothing, no calves had to be burned for this officially to happen. But, yeah, he's kind of my boy, I think.
Is it just the Ukraine, you're just adopting all Ukrainians now?
Yeah, it's more of an Eastern
Russians
European
or whatever.
Yeah, you know, I got Lithuanian blood in me, so it's the brotherhood. We're all staying together. But I think, you know, even bigger than that, this guy's so cocky and so confident, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I forgot about this fight. Yeah, good call, because this actually might be, you know, I mean, it's really an intriguing matchup, because we're going to find out what, you know, what Lomachenko is all about. But one thing I was thinking about this fight, it's kind of weird that they're throwing him right in there with Salido, don't you think? And not necessarily in terms of, like, top rank, because I guess they really have nothing to lose, but you would think that, you know, again, it's like, do the in Russia or Germany, Ukraine, where these guys are based out of, do they just not care about any of the lower weight classes? That they're not going to build this guy, you know, gradually build him up and try to make him into an attraction. They're basically just going to let him go overseas and throw him into, you know, an incredibly difficult fight, a huge step up in his second pro fight.
Well, apparently this is all his dad who's his trainer. I mean, his dad's just insane. Like, they literally wanted to debut in a title fight. And you know, and Bob was like, well, even I can't make that happen with the sanctioning bodies, you know? I mean, this, like, I just can't believe that they're just... that they're this ballsy to just want to throw him in like this. And how do you not respect a guy for that?
Well,
you know,
I think it's a combination of...
Lomachenko?
He's not
30,
he's not
right?
Super young, but he's not that old either. Yeah, he's like, I think, 30 or 31.
28.
Something like that. So he's not, like, young, but he ain't old either. But I think that, you know, the fact that he is older, or at least older than your average, you know, fledgling pro... I think that that combined with the fact that, I mean, Salido's relatively shop-worn. He might still be kind of a badass because he is, and he's going to come to fight, and he's going to give everything he's got. But at the same time, you know, he's kind of shop-worn. The guy's been around for a long time, and I think that that's probably at least a piece of what they're banking on, is that, you know, Lomachenko is very quick. He's got, he seems to have good power. You know, he looks to be pretty defensively responsible. So I think that they're kind of banking on him just being better at this point and, you know, probably able to outbox Salido. But regardless, there's serious danger there. There is.
He's only 25. I just looked it up real quick, which is
okay,
even crazier.
So there I go,
right?
Making sure.
Oh, I thought he was older.
Yeah.
To be a two-time Olympic gold medalist at 25. But it's crazy because if he's as good as he says he is, and that he's kind of shown in the little that we've seen, I think he knocks out Salido, whether Salido's shop-worn or not. So that's why this is that crazy of a matchup.
Knocks
him out. But if there's any doubt, he's going to be in trouble. That's why this is such a great fight.
I don't know, man. That's a bold call. I mean, Mikey couldn't knock him out. You know, Wanma didn't knock him out. He was landing huge shots on him. So I was kind of thinking that, you know, Lomachenko would outbox him, if anything, but...
Bruh, he's going to stop him, I'm telling you.
If that happens, I'm down. But, you know, I mean, Salido's a huge step up from the guy that he fought in his debut. And wasn't completely flawless in that fight. Even though he looked awesome, there was, if I remember, a brief kind of moment, shaky moment. I mean, he got hit in the first round. Of course, then he dropped the guy, and he ended up stopping him in, like, the fourth or something like that. But, man, Salido is just a tough, tough dude. And I feel like... Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I think
and you're right
awesome.
To have that pause. Not that kind of pause. The other pause. You're right to have that kind of pause on this. I mean, like, cause it's. I mean, I'm not trying to come out like Teddy Atlas Jr. here and try to, you know, this is my guy. He's going to win by knockout. I'm just really starting to put the pieces together in my head and think about this. And I'm like, you know what? I think he might be as good as he says he is, and I think he's going to knock him out. It's crazy.
Well, where does that put him? I mean, if he knocks out Salido, then does he vault ahead of Mikey Garcia as one of, you know, the best guy in that weight class, or, you know, right there. Well, I guess Rigondeaux is a division below. But, you know, I think it's better for boxing. I mean, anytime you create a new star, and I feel like, you know, we've kind of seen Salido's top in a pretty valiant effort, but still a losing one against Mikey. You know, if Lomachenko did do something spectacular like that, I mean, you know, definitely there'd be a drumbeat eventually for Mikey and Lomachenko, or for Rigondeaux to, you know, move up and fight.
Donaire, you got Donaire hanging
out. In there. I mean, that it'd be great to get another guy on that who's considered on that skill level to be, you know, in the mix with those guys.
PC, be the deciding vote here. Who's going to win this fight?
Man, I think given the circumstances and given the fact that it's even being made, period, I'm going to have to lean with Lomachenko, because I think that there seems to be enough of an upside with him, especially now given that, you know, there's just kind of been these waves and, you know, influxes of Eastern European talent and stuff like that. And I think right now we're right in the midst of another one where there are these fighters coming from, like, former Soviet countries and Russia, that are really, you know, making big pushes. And on top of that, the whole Salido being perhaps a little bit too experienced, I'm leaning towards Lomachenko. You know, I think that even just based on that one pro fight, he certainly looks like he's the goods. And also, you know, stories coming out of gyms and the way he trains and stuff like that, it certainly sounds like he's already fully entrenched as a pro. Like, there's not really been much transition.
He goes to the body like crazy. He's kind of got impressive tattoos, and I'm not a real big tattoo guy, but, you know.
We're big on tattoos at Queensbury Rules.
I guess I thought he was older just because they're kind of rushing him into the title fight, but, you know, it is one of those fights that just the fact that it's being made, like you said, I mean, it kind of makes you think, like, they know they can beat him.
Well, if he's as – I mean, we saw Mikey – I was shocked that Mikey put him down four times in, what, like two rounds, you know, a round and a half, whatever it was. But it was just that Salido at this point is gonna have a problem with somebody that technically gifted. So, you know, I don't know, having seen Lomachenko so little, if I could put him in a Mikey category in terms of technical ability. But, you know, I think with that amateur background, you know, he's close. So if he is that, You know, if he is, if his confidence is even close to what his ability is, then I think that he's just going to keep catching Salido. I don't think he's going to, like, a one-punch stop him, but I think it's just going to be one of those things that he's going to keep catching him and keep hurting him, and you just can't let a fight keep going on like that.
Guys, I think the biggest thing when you're, you know, got a – and obviously Lomachenko is an incredibly accomplished amateur, but when you have a prospect and a professional, you know, moving up the ranks, the biggest thing is when they kind of meet that guy who's actually going to fight back, who's not going to get, you know, hit with a good punch and get knocked out, who's going to actually be able to take a punch and throw some back. And I mean, Salido is the definition of that. And it just seems like second pro fight, I mean, it's a ballsy move, but I guess it's like if he's as good as he – thinks he is and you guys think he is, then, you know, he should beat Salido. Because,
hey,
we you know, Salido is not, like, an elite fighter, really. I mean, he's one of the toughest guys in his division, and he really, really kind of resurrected himself and made his name from beating Lopez, you know, and upsetting Lopez. I mean, before that, you know, I mean, he gave Gamboa a good fight, but he still lost pretty clearly, you know. So if Lomachenko is an upper echelon, you know, guy that he's kind of projected to be, then he should be beating a guy like Salido. It just seems that it's happening so fast.
It is. It definitely is. But because of what we're saying, I can't shake the feeling that it's just kind of it seems to kind of be, you know, pre-written. And on top of that, if Lomachenko loses, at this point, it's kind of like, so what? He took on Orlando Salido in his second fight. So what if he loses? You know, anybody else would. So, yeah, I just kind of got to lean that way.
That's
good
a
fight,
fair point. What do you guys think on Brian, your boy Canelo, making his return?
Yeah, not to spit out a run of hard stances here, but I just really feel like Canelo is going to handle this with I don't want to say ease, because Angulo is as tough as they come. But I think that he's going to showcase his skill set in this instance. And I think that, you know, he wasn't who we thought he could be in the Mayweather fight. And I think that because he had no second gear, he had no ability to adjust, it sort of suddenly we were like, oh, maybe, you know, like we said, maybe this guy wasn't ready, maybe he's this or that. You know, and obviously this is a crossroads moment, because I can give you a long list of guys that were perceived to have been built up, and when they take that first loss and lose that invincibility, mentally they don't always bounce back. And I don't mean lose that invincibility by knockout necessarily, just by Pavlik against Hopkins, just being completely dominated like that, they don't always bounce back. You know, I feel like he's going to bounce back, and I feel like the Angulo-Lara fight was a little bit of a tease. I felt like that's as good as Angulo could be, and when you really look at it, he didn't win the fight, and he had a, you know, tough injury that led him to bow out. He fought aggressively, fought like heck, but I think Canelo's going to be a little bit – he's bigger than Lara. He's going to have a little bit better chance to kind of, you know, wrestle with Angulo and keep him off him, and I think this is the type of matchup that showcases what Canelo does good.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I like Angulo. It's kind of tough not to, especially with that little, you know, hipster Angulo meme going around for a good week or so, a couple weeks ago. But at the same time, you know, he hasn't really had a real long career. He's had a couple of real big stalls in his career, too. And even in the short period of time where he's had a career, It does seem like whatever he's gone through has kind of taken its toll on him. Not to say that he's slurring or that he sounds horrible or anything, but, you know, each time he gets in the ring, he takes a lot of shots, because that's just what his style is, because it's predicated on if he can take the shots that you got and come back, he'll be able to catch up to you eventually, because he's tough. And that's, you know, it kind of worked the opposite way against Kirkland, but he's already taken some punishment in his career. Excuse me. So I kind of do feel like that, and coupled with what you were talking about, Campbell, about Canelo most likely being able to bounce back just fine, because he just seems to me like the type of guy who's not really that bothered by losing to Floyd Mayweather. I'd have to lean towards Canelo. I mean, I think that Angulo's going to go in there to bust some ass, but we'll see. I don't really think that it's going to happen.
And Angulo, like, you know, you can't call him like a journeyman or anything like that, but I don't think he's an elite level fighter. So I think, you know, he can play the part at times. He can get himself into that conversation with really good performances, but I just don't think you can expect that fight in and fight out. And I think every once in a while, guys like that can put everything together on the right day. And for some reason, that was the right style matchup for him against Lara, where, you know, everyone thought that was going to maybe be a little bit one-sided on Lara, and somehow Angulo put it all together on that night and was as good as he can be and did some things we didn't think he could do. But again, he didn't actually win that fight, and I don't think he does it again. And it plays also right into what you said, Patrick, about being a little bit shop-worn.
Yeah, I agree. What's Folo Punch's take on this?
Well, no, I never seen a guy who's like, I get injured like that and then just been completely okay in his next fight. You know, like, I feel like that could be a problem, you know, for him. I mean, his freaking, like, eye exploded against Lara, you know? I mean, it seems like that's not the kind of thing that just, like, I mean, yeah, it'll heal, but, you know, you get hit a few more times there, and I believe that that's going to happen in this fight. I mean, at first, I thought that I really liked the fight. I think I, you know, liked Angulo's. I was thinking that Angulo would probably give Canelo a really tough fight. But the more now I'm kind of coming along to Mr. Campbell's point of view that I actually think this is going to be like a big one-sided win for Canelo and kind of get himself back on track. It just feels like everything you guys have been saying. I mean, I think it's a good matchup for him stylistically. I mean, I think he can be responsible and avoid punishment, and I think he'll be able to box and hit Angulo a lot, you know, a guy who's already taken a lot of punishment. I mean, yeah, it is true that he caught Lara, which is pretty impressive, but I think there's still a lot of questions about just how good these guys are, you know, Lara and Canelo. And I mean, we've seen Canelo come up short against Mayweather, but I think, you know, some of that was just a really young fighter fighting, you know, out of his depths against a great fighter who's still pretty close to his prime. And I think there's possibility that, you know, Canelo can improve going forward. I just think he's probably, at this point in time, you know, the better fighter, you know, versus an Angulo who has been on the losing end, again, you know, most of the time when he's fought guys at the top of the division.
One thing I will say, I think that Canelo does have kind of a strike against him, at least in terms of style, because we've already seen him against a style similar to Angulo's, or very, you know, basically the same, especially if you look at what Shane Mosley was more or less when Canelo fought him a couple of years ago, which was pretty much just a guy that was going to come in there and take punches and occasionally throw him back. And even then, Shane did okay in some rounds. Regardless, I think that we've already kind of seen this fight already. We've already seen Canelo in with a guy that he's more or less going into the fight better than. And so I think that after this fight, if what we assume winds up happening and Canelo wins this fight, then, you know, I'm sorry to, like, you know, beat the drum on this because I know it gets kind of tired sometimes, but Arislandi Lara, I think that that's the exact type of style that troubles almost everybody. And I think that that's the exact type of fighter that we need to see Canelo in against if we're going to expect to see him move towards like an upper, you know, elite tier again.
Well, and I think Carlos Molina kind of always gets shortchanged in these discussions, you know, even though he didn't look great against Tishay Smith, you know, but a lot of people think that if anything, he should have gotten the win over Lara a couple years ago. And I know there's been a lot of fights since then, but, you know, Molina also, you know, was beating James Kirkland kind of out of nowhere. He was the first guy to beat Cintrone on Cintrone's way out, you know, way out of the elite from the top of the division. I mean, he's been, you know, competing on a high level for the last couple of years in that division, and he's also fighting on the undercard. So I think that, you know, what's probably going to happen is if Canelo gets through, he'll probably fight the winner of the Molina-Charlo fight, which, you know, I think Molina should be a favorite there. And I'm sure what's going to happen again, like every time, is that, you know, there's a lot of people who are going to say that Canelo's, you know, ducking Lara and should be fighting Lara. But if you look at Lara and Molina, I mean, to me, they have pretty similar resumes. And when they fought head-to-head, I thought Molina got the better of it. So I don't have a problem with that. I think either of those fights is against, you know, a really worthy contender in that division at 154. And if Canelo gets out of this year and has wins over Angulo and Molina, I mean, I think he's at the top of the division again, you know, right there with Lara if Lara comes out. And, yeah, I think, then that fight should definitely have to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, James. I think that if you're Canelo right now, unless you're getting a Cotto coming off a respectable loss to Martinez and they're just going to make that pay-per-view happen and you can't avoid the payday and it makes a lot of sense, unless that happens, you have to fight Lara or Molina for the, you know, to gain the respect because in both are trap fights and both are, you know, a lot of potential for danger. So, but, man, Lara is such a damn tease, though. I mean, I love, you know me, I love the Cuban fighters. But this guy is just such a tease as to, I'm just not confident that he's going to give you the top-level effort every time, you know? Like, you love when the random roll of the dice happens and he draws an Angulo who just won't quit and it ends up being this great fight and brings out what's fun about Lara. But, man, that guy can just give you a stinker. And it's like, I love watching him. I love his talents. I love beating the drum and saying, man, what would happen if he fought Mayweather? But I'm just not confident he's going to bring his best. Or that he's going to be pushed to bring his best. I feel like in a Canelo fight, there's too much potential for Canelo to put together 30-second rallies at the end of each round, and then the fight would definitely be in Texas, so that, you know, Lara's in a position where he's going to have to stop him.
Yeah, and that's the problem with Lara, and that's why, you know, why he's one of those guys who it kind of bugs me that when everyone, you know, puts him, acts like he's, I just don't think he's really proven himself to be like this elite guy, you know, that should, Floyd Mayweather should be fighting Arislandi Lara. I don't see, what is his best win? Austin Trout? So I don't know. I mean, to me, Maidana beating Broner, Maidana's just as worthy a contender at 147 as you know, Lara is at 154. I know that's probably ridiculous to most people. I mean, Lara's a great boxer, but, you know, I do think that, like you said, he takes, you know, long stretches and rounds with where he's inactive, and that's what killed him against Paul Williams, even though he should have gotten the decision, you know, but he lands one or two punches and then plays defense for the whole round, and it's the same kind of thing. I mean, it can be great to watch when he's kind of in his rhythm, but when he's fought elite guys, he's had, you know, I mean, I thought the Molina fight, I thought Molina won. The Williams fight, I thought was actually a closer fight. I thought Lara should have edged it, but I thought he gave away a lot of rounds and let Williams throw way too many punches without doing anything in return. And then against Angulo, he was on the ground twice. So I don't know.
I'm with you. Dude, the Lara from the Angulo fight, the one who was pushed to a fight or flight mode, that guy beats Canelo in my mind. But I don't think Canelo pushes him to get to that spot. I think Canelo Lara ends up looking like Canelo Trout all over again.
Well, the Lara Trout, I mean, that was just so, I mean, that was like the opposite of inspiring. That fight was horrible. So I can't look at the guy, I'm not going to take the guy who won that fight and put him on some pedestal and say he's like the greatest fighter and the, you know, most avoided fighter in the whole sport. I mean, he fucking stunk out a terrible decision that was a completely unwatchable fight. I mean, a Trout deserves blame too. Trout deserves most of the blame, but, you know, it was a horrible fight.
And I was so high on him entering that Molina fight, and that was the first sort of, hey, maybe this guy isn't what I thought he was, because, man, I don't think he came into the Molina fight looking to win.
I think he's really, really talented. I just think that I don't think he's any more proven than Carlos Molina or Canelo.
Well, I think that he's probably a little bit more proven than Canelo, but I guess it really depends on how
Canelo
you look
beat
at that.
Canelo beat that guy before him.
Well, arguably, but
okay,
at the same time, I'd have to say that Lara beat him more convincingly than Canelo did. But what I meant was just in the context of me having that issue with Canelo not having faced a style like that yet. And that was my issue going into the Floyd fight, too, was that we hadn't seen him face somebody who had really fast hands or good boxing ability or just the ability to slow a fight down to a pace that he wouldn't have been able to handle, because he seems to like that kind of like slower boxing pace, but he's not really equipped for it. He's not really that type of fighter. You know, he's quick enough, but he doesn't really have super quick hands. You know, and then against Trout, a lot of folks were saying, oh, look at the defense. That's great defense. But then when he came in with that against Floyd Mayweather, it was like, oh, it didn't look that good after all. You know, so in any event, all I meant was just that, you know, I think that he needs to face a style similar to that if he's going to be, you know, taken seriously as an upper echelon fighter, because beating guys that he's already quicker than and stuff like that, that's, you know, not a great way to get back towards that area.
And unfortunately, it's the problem with a lot of the Cuban fighters that I, you know, I just love and rave their ability, and I'm sitting, you know, I'm sharing the same seatbelt as Max Kellerman when we get into the Rigondeaux conversation, but, you know, they don't step on the gas enough at times to just validate how good they are when they're being pressed.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you just give me a racist pause? There was nothing racist about that statement. That was like the time Beard made that Bob Arum joke, and everyone's like, hey, it's like time to go.
Horrible. Yeah, yeah, I have nightmares about that. I think that's exactly why I will never get a job at Top Rank. But anyway, yeah, it's horrible. No, there was no racist pause there. What I was going to say was that since we already kind of brought up Carlos Molina, he's going to be fighting the other Charlo. I think it's Jermell, because Jermall fought a couple weeks ago, right? Yes. So what do you guys think about that? We don't have to spend a ton of time on it, but what do you think about that one?
That's a tough fight to ask a Charlo right now. I mean, I know Molina is Chicago's own Foley's guy, but you know, I like when people step into these type of tests, and I'm not convinced that there's actually two Charlos, though. I mean, that's just a conspiracy theorist in me. Is there any pictures of them together?
I have no idea.
No, just kidding. It's interesting. You know, I mean, it's tough. You know, we've all sort of been on the road of, like, we're not going to take the time to separate the Charlos until they give us a reason, right?
Yeah.
In our head?
That was my
general
philosophy.
What do we know about this Charlo in comparison to the guy who beat Rosado?
I can't tell. I mean, I know that this is the guy who had fought Antoine Smith, and I've seen him fight a couple
yes.
times, but
that's
I'm kind of
probably
just assessing the matchup on paper, you know? I mean, I haven't just experience and the level of opposition. I mean, you have to give it to Molina, but at the same time, he has a pretty ugly style himself.
Yeah, Molina's style almost plays against him as much as it helps him in certain fights. I mean, the guy cannot catch a break on the scorecard, so it's probably going to, you know, you got to probably lean Charlo in this spot, but it's an interesting fight. It's one I wouldn't mind watching.
Well, I mean, that he was trailing Kirkland on one of those cards or a couple of those cards was just ridiculous.
That was as bizarre a fight as you can remember. I mean, Kermit Cintron going headfirst to the floor was more normal than that fight.
Oh, my gosh. Both of those were just ordeals. I mean, really, those are the type of things that, like, secretly I walked away from them just, like, giddy and laughing my ass off. And then, like, you know, months later I was able to look back and go, holy shit, we all looked so horrible because it was so weird.
Were you there?
Wow. No, I wasn't there.
Oh,
Citron
flew out against Williams?
No, I was supposed to have gone, but then I wound up having to work, you know, my real job. And then, yeah, so I didn't wind up covering it, but I wound up watching it later, and I was just like, oh, my God, what? That was insane. And then punching or kicking the ambulance after, while, like, you know, minutes after he's on the ground rolling around in pain, like grabbing his arm and then his leg and then his back, and then his chest, and then his head, and then it was like, no, I'm fine, I want to fight. And then he punches the ambulance. I was like, oh, my God. You can't write that. You can't write it.
Yeah, I guess he had some bizarre endings to fights, you know, but not to be that guy either, but I actually had another thing. I thought Cintron was beating Williams before that happened. I kind of thought Williams looked like crap, almost foreboding his eventual, you know, knockout to Sergio.
Did you also think Dawson was beating Hopkins before?
Yeah, I had that
before the body slam.
I had Dawson up huge in my car.
Yeah, that whole thing was weird. Like, you know, Cintron looked like he kind of hurt Paul Williams, and then Paul Williams was coming back, and it was like he just, like, dove headfirst right out of the ropes, Superman style. It's crazy. Can't beat it.
Well, and also the headbutt slash knockout from Mon Martinez knocked Cintron out.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, he got basically knocked out twice and still got a draw.
He was involved in a few fiascos. But weirdly enough, he was still ranked as like a top junior middleweight, because I remember it when Carlos Molina beat him, even after all that, not probably just on name alone. And, of course, he was the first guy to beat Angulo.
Didn't he get knocked out in the Loaded Gloves rematch with Margarito, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He got stopped both times,
yeah. He got stopped both times. And then when, after the thing with Shane Mosley happened, he was one of the first to step up and say, yep, I always knew he had loaded gloves the whole time. That's why he knocked me out. And then, like, in his next fight, he got stopped. Hey, speaking of Margarito, though, there's rumors that Kell Brook is going to be fighting Margarito.
Seriously?
What the fuck? Yeah, I mean, I have, sorry, but I've been trying to, like, not uncork the F word too much on the show, just in case there's kids watching, but what the fuck?
what weight
class
is this?
I'd love to see that.
Is this 154?
I don't even know. Somebody had just brought it up on Twitter a couple minutes. Oh, it was Mr. Valero, Valero's twin, Mr. JMC2488. And
John Chandler.
Reading about it. Yeah.
Chandler, dude.
He brought it up a couple minutes ago, although I saw a little blurb about it. I think it was like late last night I saw it before I went to bed. And I was kind of just like, you know, I'll sleep on this because that can't be true. And then he mentioned it, and so that reminded me. But really, like, is there a respectable commission on the face of the planet? I mean, I already know the answer to this. But is there a respectable commission on the face of the planet that's seriously going to license Antonio Margarito to fight at this point?
This is boxing, right?
I already knew the answer, damn it, but do it anyway. Wow.
I don't want him to come back. Unless he fights Angulo at 154, I'd sign off.
He was
one
on
more
the
time.
Verge of stopping Cotto in that rematch before the the doctors forced Smoker to.
Dude, he would have stopped him in the 27th round, right?
Yeah,
I was at that fight, and let me tell you, they put me up in the upper deck for that one. So I have no idea what happened in the ring that night.
Really?
I was up with the bloggers. It was great.
Yeah, I was there too.
It's happened to me before.
I was actually
they put me there too.
They put me in the crowd, and I'm not kidding. They actually put me in the crowd that night. That happens sometimes, you know.
Yeah, it's happened to me before.
With your notebook and your laptop in the crowd.
You got to pay your dues. I actually dropped the four letters, the ESPN, on the security guard, thinking he was just going to open up some magical door and say, "Oh, here's the double auxiliary press room for."
Here you are. Special. Sure, you're sitting right between Jim Lampley and Max Kellerman.
Why don't you join the broadcast?
Oh, Brian Campbell. I thought you said Ryan Mamble. Oh, Brian, come right over here.
And he wanted no part of that, so I actually snuck into the auxiliary press area and was not kicked out. And then you get a TV in front of you that's on a 7-second delay, so it was great. You know?
That's awesome.
That's pretty solid.
You hear the crowd, and then you get to see what they were yelling about.
Yes. Beggars, one day will be choosers. I'm telling you.
Hey, man, one blog at a time, buddy.
One blog at a time.
We'll work through this.
No, I don't want Tony to come back. There's certain fighters that I just want to – you know, I was surprised he walked away at that time. I don't want him to come back. Again, unless it's against Angulo and it's a blood battle at 154, and I can sign off on it right now. If that's not the case, I don't want to see him in the ring again.
Yeah, I could. I don't know. If a doctor told me that his eye was okay, I could get behind it. You know, I mean, because against somebody like Kell Brook, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I could see if Margarito's eye was okay, I could see that being kind of interesting, even considering where Margarito was at, you know, judging from his last fight, if that happened at, like, 154. But, yeah, you guys are probably right. He's probably,
If he went blind, who would you blame, Manny Garcia or Lawrence Cole?
I think I'd blame Garcia.
I'd go Joe Cortez. Like, just because.
Well, we know he's firm, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I kind of have a, I guess, somewhat unique perspective on that, just because, you know, when when it was going around, you know, for, I don't know, I'd say maybe from about 2005 roughly to like 2008, it really seemed like Margarito was really on the upper tip of the, you know, welterweight weight class. And I was a really big fan of his. And I was one of the folks that was kind of beating the drum for him to fight Mayweather. And it wasn't like I was like, oh, he'll knock Mayweather out. I was realistic about what would probably happen. I was just a big fan and thought he deserved a shot. And then, you know, I wound up catching Mosley versus Margarito live. And I got there kind of late, cause, like an idiot, even though I'd been there like a dozen times before, I got lost on the way to the Staples Center like an idiot. And so I got there a little bit late, and by the time I had gotten there, all the rumors about how, you know, something had happened, you know, pre-fight were already kind of swirling around. And the first rumor I got was that Shane Mosley had loaded his gloves, and I was like, whoa, what? And then when it actually came out, I was like, holy shit, you know, I'm like ashamed right now. And then he got his ass kicked, and then I was even more ashamed. And so in any event, kind of as time went by, I was basically just a bitter ass former Margarito fan, and probably still am in a way, because it was so shameful.
Yeah.
What, you should take that picture down off your Facebook account then, of you and Margarito with the big wide smile. It's my favorite picture on your.
I know. It's,
I am
well,
ashamed
I'm
of this
not,
man. He has like a
know,
portrait of Margarito
his,
above his bed.
Yeah, obviously I'm not that ashamed, but yeah, it was the whole situation was just really shitty, and it was really stupid everything that happened. And so now, a couple of years later, and a couple ass kickings later, it's kind of just like, why? I don't really understand why. Like, I mean, I'm not as you know, I'm not ready to go back and say that Margarito's entire career should be clouded under the suspicion that he had loaded wraps his entire career. But at the same time, I'm like, really? Kell Brook, after a couple of years off, I guess.
I think his entire career kind of should be questionable, you know, and sucks. But that's kind of the way it is, you know. I mean, what he did was one of the worst possible things a fighter can do. You know, and there's just no getting around it. But that said, I mean, it's like in boxing. I mean, you can be one of those guys who sees everything black and white, and it's just like, oh, Margarito, you know, loaded his gloves. He's a cheat. You know, fuck him. Or look at it, you know, as a more complex that it really is. And you watch his fights, and you know, loading his gloves doesn't account for how much heart, how much of a beating, and the crazy amount of punches that he was throwing. You know,
no
I mean,
question.
There was still a lot he was doing that made him, you know, a compelling figure to watch. And, of course, when you found it out, yeah, he became, you know, probably boxing's biggest villain at the time.
And he's great at playing the villain. I mean, he had cornrows. He had cornrows in the second Cotto fight. Who does that?
Yeah. No, I know. So it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, you kind of have to be, you know, I've never been that guy to be like, you know, real kind of pious and sanctimonious. I mean, even though, of course, what he did was horribly wrong. Of course it was, you know, but boxing is just such a strange kind of sport filled with these characters. And as far as I know, you know, no, I mean, I don't know what the, you know, consequences of what Margarito did were, because the only thing we know for sure is that he, you know, we don't even know 100% if he ever did fight with loaded gloves. I mean, we can speculate. We don't know any of that for sure. All we know is that he was trying to against Mosley and he got caught.
It's awful. But, and he also robbed us of that first Cotto fight, because that fight was,
yeah,
that fight was so good. And now, I mean, I've rewatched it, but you almost, it's a weird feeling when you rewatch it, obviously. And he robbed himself of a great performance, because as you talked about, man, that guy walked through hell to get to that point to stop Cotto later.
Yeah, I mean, he took a beating from Cotto that night, you know. And it doesn't change how great of a fight that was. I mean, I understand. Like, yeah, you look at it in a different lens, and of course you think, you know, I mean, the way he just battered Cotto's face, it's really hard not to assume that he was, you know, had loaded gloves that night. But we just don't know. And to me, it was still an incredibly dramatic spectacle full of just ridiculous back and forths. And a lot of it, you know, what Margarito took and had to walk through, I mean, that's a big part of that story. And that didn't have to do with loaded gloves. So I'm not saying I'm rooting the guy on. I mean, I at the time loved it when Pacquiao gave him the beating that he did, you know, and I thought he totally deserved it. And you know, Pacquiao showed a lot of mercy not to go after him the last couple rounds. I think a lot of fans, especially Cotto fans, were probably egging him on. And, you know, the sentiment at the Garden in the rematch, too, was that, you know, we wanted to see Cotto, you know, avenge himself. And you know, because we all thought that Margarito was dirty. But, you know, it just doesn't take away from the fact he was a compelling character in the sport, even if he was one of the bad guys.
This just in, James Tiberius Foley roots on Antonio Margarito.
Yeah, that's what I just heard. That's the headline.
This just
tomorrow.
In to the WKSKS news desk. Lucky Lindy circles the globe.
Like Campbell said, the cornrows. You know what I mean? I rest my case. I mean, come on.
No, that's basically only second to Pauly coming in with a weave on and having to get it cut mid-fight.
That was a great fight. Who was that against? Was that against?
That was against. Ndu.
Ndu.
Second fight.
That was that Showtime doubleheader in the afternoon in England, right? To set up the Pauly Hatton fight.
It might not even have been Showtime. I think it was when they were doing some other weird network, or it might have been. I don't remember.
Oh, you mean like Versus? Was that a Versus?
It might have been Versus, but I do remember it was in the afternoon. Yeah, and it was from. Manchester, I think, because it was the main event was Hatton versus
Lorenzo. Oh,
Lascano,
yeah. That was an awful fight. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Tony with the gloves too. He also gave Shane that little resurrection he had. You know, which was a little bit undeserved because everyone's always like, you know, how can all the Mayweather guys are always like when you try to discredit Mayweather's run, then you're like, well, he fought Shane, and he had just knocked out Margarito, and he was the top welterweight. Well, it's like, well, no, he fought Shane 16 months after Shane knocked out Margarito, and Margarito had loaded gloves and got stripped of them and weren't the same, and Shane was old, and Shane probably wasn't as good as that performance anyway. So it's like, yeah. That's,
and he rocked he rocked Floyd real bad in the second round.
Yeah. I mean,
Yeah, it sucks that happened because if he had, if Floyd never would have fought Mosley if Mosley hadn't done that to Margarito, and maybe we would have gotten Pacquiao, you know, Mayweather Pacquiao. I mean, at the time, Pacquiao was really the only alternative beyond Mosley.
It brings me back to what how this whole thing started, Beardo, where you were like, man, I wanted to see Mayweather Margarito, and it's not because you thought Margarito was going to win, but it's because you have to fight the guys. And I think even more than Mayweather not fighting Pacquiao, the biggest problem I've always had is that he took that time off during when the welterweight division was so stacked and Mayweather was in his absolute prime, and he took all that time off to retire twice, and he ended up fighting he fought an undersized Marquez and Ortiz in like a 4-year span. That's the only people he fought, when he should have been fighting prime unbeaten Cotto, should have been fighting crazy-ass villain Margarito, you know, should have even
Paul
been
Williams.
Fighting Paul Williams, should have been fighting unbeaten Berto, although obviously he would have beat him, but still, you know, there's still guys that there was a run there where that division was so stacked, and that he didn't go through that run, that hurts me more than him not fighting Pacquiao or not fighting Costazua at 140 or not fighting Spadafora in the gym after he beat his ass or whatever, you know.
Well, and then not only that, but went ahead and pulled the retirement stunt.
Yeah,
that
multiple
was like,
times.
Ooh, that was what kind of got me, where it was like, all right, he clearly doesn't really want this. He doesn't really want a part of this welterweight division as it's going on. And, hey, you know what? It was pretty smart because everybody fought each other and beat the shit out of each other. And he didn't wind up having to face those guys anyway because of that. So, you know, in terms of intelligence, it was a pretty smart plan because it didn't hurt his marketability 1 cent.
And it kept him fresh. I mean, would he be this good what is he? He's turning 37 in like a week. Would he be this good right now at 37 if he had gone through those fights? Probably not, right?
Probably not. I can't imagine he would be anyway. I don't know. I mean, of course, we're probably going to get bombarded. Well, not like anybody listens to this show, but we would get bombarded by a whole bunch of Floyd haters if they actually heard all that. But that's just kind of how I see it. I don't really see anything wrong with that, especially with the way that some of those guys are looking right now after having faced each other just a couple of years later. Shane's done. Paul Williams is in a wheelchair. I know that not from fighting, but still. You know, even then, even before that, he was already looking kind of a little bit shop-worn, you know, and
yeah,
Margarito's done, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
it's an interesting shift in the dynamic, though, if Mayweather-Pacquiao ever does happen, because it's like at this point Pacquiao has like nothing to lose. I mean, no, Mayweather will never get credit for fighting a prime version of him. So if it happens, Pacquiao is going to be a huge underdog and will be thought of as, you know, well past his best and knocked out and, you know, really only have anything to gain as far as legacy-wise, I think. And I could still see it happening sometime, you know, next year. I mean, the big thing is if Pacquiao becomes a free agent and leaves
he's
top rank, I mean, that's probably the only – you don't think that there's any way?
I don't think he's going. I think there's just that – I don't know. I think there's the weird – not weird, but there's the loyalty thing. There's the long-time relationship thing. There's always those rumors about money, too. I don't know. I just feel like he's not going anywhere.
Well, then
man,
you also have
so
to
– weird.
And don't forget also that Pacquiao's from a rice paddy. So, I mean, come on.
And he's tough,
you know,
as, tough as
Merchant
weed.
Said it himself. Merchant said it himself. He's tough as weed. So you got to factor that in.
Yeah.
It just seems – it's almost like unprecedented. I mean, there have been big fights that haven't happened before, but – most of the time, I mean, they do. Even if it's, you know, years past the expiration date, I mean, they do happen because, of course, you know, promoters cash in on names. And I don't know. But the other way, and, you know, I mean, I just can't imagine that we're going to go through this era and never see it. I mean, because I would take it even if it is past their prime. You know, I'd prefer Pacquiao over any of the opponents Mayweather's likely to face in the next year or two.
Do you realize how good, though, Mayweather-Bradley would be right now? Am I the only one who just,
no,
like...
No, that's the other
oh,
one.
Oh, no.
Huge.
But, I would love
but Bradley
that.
Has to beat Pacquiao, clearly.
You're saying that,
that,
and you're right, because he didn't deserve the first win, but I would take it right now, because, to me, he's the, you know, he's the number one welterweight outside of Mayweather because
I'd
of the win.
Yeah, I'd take it.
I mean, dude, do you realize
man,
how good of a fight that would be, considering Bradley's ability to you know, with his footwork, to close down space in a hurry and just, you know, no one's going to knock each other down or out. It's just going to be high-level chess with Bradley not backing down. I mean, that would be a heck of a challenge to see Mayweather, you know, have to take that on. I think he would win, but it would be an incredible fight.
And Bradley is very quick. He's kind of deceptively quick. You know, so I think that he's one of the few fighters who would actually be able to handle the speed of Floyd Mayweather and not be totally, you know, thrown for a loop by it. So, yeah, I'd be all about that fight for sure.
I mean, we don't, you know, again, it goes back to that hamster wheel, like, where you go through all these different emotions with Mayweather, Pacquiao, and all that, where we care for 1 month and 1 year later we don't care. But how is this guy, Floyd Mayweather Jr., not fighting, not making roads to fight a guy like Bradley? You know, I know you could say, well, hey, Bradley, though he deserved to lose those fights. But how are you know, I mean, I guess this is the same argument for Mayweather or Pacquiao, and it's the same argument for the last 5 years, so maybe, again, I'm just beating a drum here. But how do you not want to prove everybody wrong? Be like, that guy's nothing. Here, I'll show you. I'll step in the ring and beat him. He knows he's not going to get knocked out by Bradley. Why wouldn't you want to step in there and prove that?
Well, taking Pacquiao out of the equation, Bradley's clearly the most deserving fighter. You know, if you could pick anyone in the world to take Mayweather. I mean, he is like the number, you know, the top welterweight contender by virtue of beating Marquez. But and he's you know, much more qualified for it than, you know, Amir Khan or Marcos Maidana. But you know, obviously it's all just promotional. I mean, it's not going to hurt Floyd's legacy not to fight Bradley.
Well, as far as, you know, I pretty much hate talking about it, and I try to avoid it, but as far as the whole Floyd Pacquiao thing goes, I'll say this. In terms of the historical perspective, I can't think of too many times off the top of my – I can't think of any off the top of my head where there were two fighters who were the extremely clear number one and number two fighter in the world. And not only that, but both were very clearly in their prime.
In the same
and
division.
And they did not fight. And
in the same division.
In the same division and did not fight. And as big and as popular worldwide as both are and did
right,
not
like,
fight.
You take Bo Holyfield,
that's
which
embarrassing.
Is the recent comparison, and you can just say, well, yeah, well, Bo was only at the top for such a short time. So, yeah, we didn't get Bo Holyfield, but Bo was out of the sport in a few years later. Man, this soap opera's 5 years now. I mean, this is just ridiculous. In the same division, at the same time, and even though Manny's endured a robbery loss and a vicious knockout loss, he's still right back in the mix.
Yeah, and it's embarrassing, and it's really like a big strike against the sport, you know, and I hate to say that, but it's true.
Well, I'll just say this, because I don't like to antagonize, like, the Floyd fans, you know, or the Pacquiao fans, because, like, anybody who's ever even written anything about boxing on even the smallest blog about it, either of those guys has probably seen, you know, the lengths that their fans will go to, you know, the irrational, you know, lunacy at times that they have to present, you know, their arguments and stuff. But what's so funny is that if you brought up Pacquiao as an opponent for Floyd with those guys, they would all say, Pacquiao got knocked out. Are you kidding? Like, come on. Like, that's over. That's dead. Meanwhile, they're justifying fighting Amir Khan.
Yeah.
You know, which just is just mind-blowing.
I love when they're like, I love when these guys on Twitter get at me and they're like, you know, how could you say that Mayweather, who turned pro at 130, should go up and fight at middleweight? How could you say that? And I'm like, Oscar debuted at 130. Yeah, I know. Duran debuted at 112. You know, Pacquiao debuted at 106 and went up 50 pounds, whatever. It's like, are you kidding me?
Well, the other thing is, like, it's respect to Mayweather that we're saying, like, hey, we want to see him fight Golovkin. We wanted to see him fight Sergio Martinez, because we're acknowledging that, like, this guy is obviously a smaller, even at welterweight. You know, he's a natural welterweight, lightweight welterweight probably, and, you know, the fact that he's good enough that we want to see him go up there, and he'd be a favorite against any of those guys.
Dude,
it's a tribute to how good he is. So it's not like
over everybody.
Just that.
Exactly. I'd favor him over everybody up until you get to Andre Ward.
I think I'd favor Golovkin, to be honest.
Well, that'd be the toughest fight, no question.
But I don't know.
But like the point is,
that's just blind faith. That's just blind faith, though. I mean, that's just thinking that Golovkin has enough power and technique that if he could hit him clean, he could knock him out because he's so much bigger and stronger.
True.
No. I'd favor Provodnikov's mom. Come on, let's not, get into that discussion.
If she's wearing those green drapes again, I'm definitely going to favor her.
Woo-wee.
Well, I wanted to ask you, speaking of that, though, you man the Tuesday boxing chat over at ESPN.com, and what kind of crazy stuff do you see in the queue for that?
Yeah, it's pretty intense. I wish that there was a subscription based only version where I can plug in. It's, you know, today was a great example.
Yeah,
where you can see the ones that would get you fired for posting if you pay a fee. But that guy Chandler, that guy Valero, that guy is out of control today. He's one of the best candidates in that. Yeah, it gets pretty out of control, you know, especially during a fight week. I mean, there's just questions pouring in and people are taking shots at me, taking shots at everybody. It's pretty humorous.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, I can kind of get a I always used to get a sense of how much abuse that Rafael was taking, although obviously he's not posting most of it. But you can tell that, like, you know, I mean, you can just kind of tell at times that, like, that he's facing some hostility. And I was kind of thinking, I was wondering if you were getting that same type of heat.
It's not a lot of hate, but you know, the people will let you know how you're doing, though. So it's fun to see.
That's pretty funny. Hey, do you guys want to jump in this? Our boy Alex Berry was asking about the Deontay Wilder Malik Scott fight, which I think is kind of intriguing. You know, I mean, I think it's definitely he's the most legitimate opponent that Wilder's faced to this point. Although, and even though it was a bad stoppage, I mean, I still think getting hurt by Derek Chisora like that, you know, takes a little bit of the luster off, because we've seen him hurt and we know Wilder's a power puncher, but we also know, you know, Scott's a better boxer and had more experience than any of the guys Wilder's fought. So what do you guys think about that one?
Good.
I like that fight a lot. I really like that. You know, it's not a huge leap up, but I think it's based on his pace, which has been a snail crawl pace, this is a responsible step up now that, you know, that it's an honest step up for Wilder in the spot. It's an intriguing matchup of a guy who's going to be slick, a guy that is smart in there. He's not just going to be some washed up bull like a Ljakovic coming at him waiting to get knocked out. It's a guy who can cause some problems. It's not a guy who can necessarily punch that we're going to, you know, because I just have doubts about Wilder's chin. It's so stupid. It all started by me rewatching Lennox Lewis against Michael Grant. It just sort of hit me that, like, man, I got to see this guy take a punch, you know, before I'm going to get excited.
Yeah.
This isn't that fight where we're going to find that out.
He did take a punch in his last fight. Didn't he kind of get hit, like, right at the very beginning by a jab, and he kind of backed up?
I'm not remembering that moment.
I feel like there was one moment early in the last fight where Wilder took a punch, kind of like, you know, took a few steps back. But it was like the very beginning of the fight.
Yes. It was, like, the first shot that was thrown. it kind of looked like it wobbled him. But then when they went back on the replay, it kind of just looked like he tripped a little bit to me.
I remember that now.
Okay.
But he did catch a hard punch. It looked like it was more right in the moment. And then when he went back and watched it, was like, oh, it wasn't that big a deal actually.
Yeah, how awesome would Wilder Chisora be?
Oh, that'd be great. Dude, Wilder Fury, are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah, Wilder Fury. That's a good call.
Yeah, I think that is probably the if they were going to make almost a showbox type of matchup between heavyweights of, you know, guys on the way up that need to either, you know, shit or get off the pot, I think that that's the fight that they would need to make.
I'd like to see I still kind of want to see Wilder Areola. Well, I don't know if promotionally if that could happen, but I think that's the perfect kind of guy to really see what Wilder's got, you know?
That is, and I think that would work, because wasn't Areola on Showtime against Mitchell, or did I make that up?
Oh, yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was. Well, Areola just...
maybe he's like a friend. I think he's with one of the independent promoters.
Well,
he's with Goosen,
didn't he
right?
Sign with Heyman?
Oh, yeah, Heyman. He is with Heyman now.
Yeah, and he's
so,
with
yeah,
Goosen,
so if he's with Heyman,
promoter.
Then he would be Showtime.
Yeah, good call. Where are you guys at right now with your confidence in Wilder as a title prospect?
Kind of depends, like who has the title, you know? If it's Vladimir, it's going to be tough. If they retire and it's kind of up for grabs, I mean, I haven't seen. Well, what's his name? Kubrat Pulev is one of the kind of highly touted guys. And then there's a couple of European guys, but of the, you know, Povetkin we saw lose to Klitschko, but I think he could probably hang in there with any of the, you know, the Furies and Wilders, and, you know, who knows what Sir David Hay is up to. But I think Wilder fits right into that group and, you know, could compete. I think I haven't seen much of Pulev, but I mean, I know he's, you know, more highly regarded than a Wilder is, but beyond that, you know, those couple guys, I mean, I think Wilder should be right there as long as, like, his chin doesn't turn out to be a massive liability, which it could. I mean, we don't really know yet. We don't know how he's going to respond to a guy who actually fights back.
Yeah, that's the question for me. I don't think that there's any question that he has some punching power that is probably beyond the normal, you know, reasonable amount of punching power. He's a puncher. He looks like he's a good puncher to me, and I don't think that that should be in question. What's in question is his level of opposition up to now, because you pretty much pegged it. He's being brought along very slow. But also, you know, you kind of do have to take into account that even if you looked at his amateur fights and, like, his performance in the Olympics, he was really, really raw. You know, like, just his technique was not really there. He was flailing all over the place. So it was probably a good decision to move him along the way that they did. And I can also kind of appreciate that a number of his fights were off TV. They weren't, you know, just taking up TV spots with his development, which I can appreciate. But at this point, there's just kind of going to be a point where you reach and there's no going back. There's no taking steps back from where he's been at, and that's kind of what it seems to me like what they're trying to do. Not now, but in the last, like, year and a half, it was like they looked like they were going to make a real big push, and then they realized that Vladimir Klitschko wasn't going anywhere, so they're like, whoa, 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 hold on. Let's wait until this dude gets older or, like, more shop-worn or something, because, you know, it's a snail's pace, and at this point, it's kind of just like, well, there's a really big jump from where he's at to Vlad Klitschko, so do something.
Well, yeah, we know how dominant Klitschko is, and I think there is kind of a thought, because he's been so dominant against all of the other best heavyweights that he's faced in the last few years, that, like, he's unbeatable and no one would ever have a chance to fight him, but or to beat him of this any of these guys right now. But that said, you know, I mean, Wilder does kind of prove himself with another win or two. Like, if he beat Scott and then beat somebody like Areola, or beat somebody like Fury, you know, beat somebody who kind of was, like, somewhere in the top 10 at heavyweight, why not give Wilder a shot at Vladimir? You know, who else is out there? I mean, at least he has athletic advantages and he has power, you know, proven power. What, you know, why not? I mean, so I think in that sense, like, he's right there as being a legit contender, at least in the perception of it. I mean, we're never, you know, the boxing community is never going to favor anybody over Klitschko until it happens. because the heavyweight division is kind of, you know, looked at as just not that good. So, I mean, there's no contender. There's no other guys you could beat to even launch yourself in a position. You know, even if Wilder, like, knocked out, you know, knocks out Scott in the first round and knocks out Areola in the early rounds, we're still not going to say, like, oh, you know, he'll beat Vladimir Klitschko. You know, it's kind of like we're going to have to see it to believe it. But I think he's right there in terms of, like, the tools that he has. If he, you know, can just prove himself against a couple guys more credible than the opponents that he's fought, you know, he'll be, you know, I'd rather, I mean, see him than you know, half the other guys in the top 10.
Because he's got a real punch, you know. And Vladimir's run has been clouded by the fact that his biggest weakness was taking a big punch, and he really hasn't fought another big puncher after he sort of made the adjustment, refound his confidence, learned how to box safer. And, you know, and his run has been impressive, but, man, he hasn't fought a puncher. And that's why we were so excited about the Hay fight. And Hay just, of course, didn't really come to win. And it would be exciting just to finally see him step up and take that Vlad shot. But I don't feel like they want it. You know, I feel like they want a belt to open up, and they want to go that path. That's what it sort of looks like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that there's no question. I'm not really super high on I'm super high, but I'm not real high on Deontay Wilder. Just because, you know, I think that there's still some development there, and it's just such a huge cliff from Klitschko on down. But if, you know, if you're taking that into account and still looking at Wilder and his development, who he is, you know, where he is as a fighter, where he is in the division, there shouldn't be any question that he's at the very least on the brink of contendership, if not a legitimate contender. Do I think that putting him in with Vladimir Klitschko in the next maybe 6 to 12 months would really make sense? In my opinion, not really, just because I don't think that's a fight he could win. But as far as who else is Vladimir Klitschko going to be in against, you're already seeing he's taking on somebody, you know, coming up that nobody really knows. So he's running out of options. So sooner or later, there's going to be that question, or there's going to be that type of, you know, push to get at Vladimir Klitschko. And that's, at the end of the day, that's the goal. That should be the goal. So, I don't know. It kind of just depends on where Vladimir Klitschko is, you know, as far as I can tell. Because it looks to me like there's this, just, as Teddy Atlas would say, the silent contract among all the heavyweights that Vladimir Klitschko is the man. Nobody's really going to beat him. So, fuck it. Let's all just sit around. That's kind of what it seems like to me.
Nice use of an Atlas-ism right there. I like that.
You know, I'll break that out all day. But that's why nobody wants to watch heavyweights. I don't want to watch heavyweights. You know, it's until something really happens.
Yeah.
I don't really care about all this.
I never want to be.
That last card from last weekend was horrible.
Yeah, I think the heavyweight division, I mean, it's just gotten so bad that, like, even if, like, best case scenario, like, Wilder just, like, blows through a few more guys and then, like, fights Klitschko and knocks Klitschko out, we're still not going to be, like, calling Deontay Wilder a top 10 heavyweight of all time or calling him one of the pound-for-pound best fighters or anything like that. You know, the division's
that's
just not
call.
As good as the lower weight divisions.
Somebody,
it never will be.
Not.
I mean, look at Klitschko.
Yeah. Somebody in my chat today was like, what would get Wilder on the cover of ESPN, the magazine, and Sports Illustrated? You know, would it, you know, what, if he would, like, knocked out the Klitschko's? And your knee-jerk reaction would be, yeah, if he knocked him out with Klitschko and you have a young, unbeaten American heavyweight who can talk. But then you're like, wait, nobody cares, right? Like, nobody cares. There's just no – there's not even ground-level buzz. There's negative buzz.
Nobody would care. I mean, I think everybody would just say, like, Klitschko sucks. I mean, you know, and – Klitschko is very good at what he does. But, no, I mean, I think people would just say, well, Klitschko always had a, you know, chin, and he got older, and Wilder is a huge puncher, but the heavyweight division in general sucks, and so whatever. I mean, we're going to anoint David Hay as some all-time great if he would have won that fight.
But I do think that there might be a little spike of, like, patriotism because he's American, though, if Deontay Wilder were able to do something like that. But other than that, no, I mean, it doesn't have the same type of notoriety as it used to.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, you'd think that, I don't know, it would be really interesting.
Yeah, no, it would be.
But the fact that we're, like, questioning, like, if he, you know, that's, like, his best case scenario, and we're still wondering, like, how famous would that make him? Like, would he become a pay-per-view star? Would he be, you know, and that's if he knocks out Klitschko. You know, so I mean, to get to that point, I mean, that just shows like the heavyweight division is just not the money division anymore. I mean, I think the Klitschko's probably, it's not the Klitschko's fault. They're kind of a symbol of it, but it's just that there's just not as many good athletes fighting there and guys who've been lifelong boxers.
Yeah, no question.
It's like one or the other. It's either good athletes or lifelong boxers, you know, but it's not the same level that you see in, like, I mean, the welterweight division. Or...
Yeah. Well, let me, there were two other fights that I wanted to talk about, even if it was quickly, before we exited, if that's cool. And one of them, I was reminded because we were talking about Margarito earlier, and Margarito's old trainer, Javier Capetillo, works with Miguel Vasquez, who is fighting this weekend. And so that kind of, like, made the connection in my brain, and I was like, oh, yeah, there's that fight this weekend. Because it's from Macau, China, so needless to say, it's kind of being, you know, advertised as the Zhao Shiming card, because at this point, that's just kind of what they all are when they're coming from Macau. That's, you know, don't give me that racist pause. That's what it is, guys. No, it is what it is. You know, that's kind of how it's developing. Zhao Shiming seems to be the star or whatever on this card, but Miguel Vasquez is fighting, and Miguel Vasquez is most likely the top lightweight in the world right now. But do you guys have any feelings about that fight at all, aside from Miguel Vasquez generally kind of being an eyesore? Go.
I loathe Miguel Vasquez fights. I mean, and I love things like Rigondeaux, and I try to appreciate everything. And man, I couldn't care less about this fight. Let's be honest. Let's put it right out there.
That's kind of how I figured this discussion
like
would go.
I like the idea of Miguel Vasquez. You know, I mean, he's a really good boxer. His fights are terrible to watch. Yeah, but eventually, you know, the thing I remember about Vasquez is kind of seeing him as a. I think he beat like Ahmed Diaz or somebody like that. But you look at his resume like a few years ago and you see this guy with three losses and you look back and it was like two against Canelo Alvarez and one against Tim Bradley. You know, Vasquez is a lightweight. It's just, he's a tough fighter. And I think he came up, obviously, you know, he was one of Canelo's opponents in Canelo's like fourth fight or something like that. You know, Vasquez is not a guy who was supposed to be some kind of a world champion, you know, top fighter in his division, but he learned how to box and he moves around the ring and he throws his punches and he kind of generally, you know, plays an avoidance strategy. And it is kind of unsightly to watch. But the thing I feel like about a guy like him is that he kind of earned his place there. I think he has a belt at lightweight, right? Like the IBF.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a superstar, you're supposed to beat somebody like that. I mean, I know Vasquez is a neutralizer, and he's a really good defensive boxer, but, you know, somebody, I mean, what does a prime Manny Pacquiao moving up in weight at 135 do to Miguel Vasquez? Or what does Floyd Mayweather at 135 do to Miguel Vasquez? So until somebody like that, like Mikey Garcia, comes up to 35 and fights him, until somebody beats him, you know, he's always going to be a thorn in the side of that division. And it's kind of like, you know, on a smaller scale, the same way I would feel about, like, Rishar Abreel. You know, I mean, they're not fun fighters to watch, but they've earned their place as being kind of at the top of the division. And until somebody beats them, you know, I don't have sympathy for somebody who goes in and fights Vasquez and loses a boring decision. I mean, that's on the opponent. I mean, this is Vasquez's style. That's how he wins fights. And until somebody can come up and you know, take his title from him, he's going to be around, you know, and he's going to be somebody we'll have to talk about.
That's as positive you could spin it, and that's actually a really good point. And the Abreel mention, and
definitely,
it's kind of Sergio Mora's style as well. And I do respect one part about it. It's something. It's a specialized skill that they can bring into a sport, and it's like you have to step up and beat that. And it might not be TV friendly. They might not, you know, but if they're going to win a belt, you're going to have to get through them. So I do respect that part about it. That it's almost like holding the ball in basketball. We hate watching teams that hold the ball in basketball and do the four corners, but
yeah,
you know,
well,
it's
it
legal.
Away.
Yeah, make it stop.
It's not that like he's unbeatable. I mean, it's one thing with like Guillermo Rigondeaux, who's just like an excellent boxer, one of the best in the world, and can really impose his style against, you know, against elite fighters. But I mean, Miguel Vasquez is beatable. So it's just a matter of, you know, eventually a good enough fighter is going to, you know, what they should do is kind of like how Golden Boy made Trout and Lara and kind of are putting their unappealing fighters against each other. So in the end, when they have to put, like, you know, their TV-friendly guy, Canelo, there'll only be one of those kind of, you know, stylistic nightmares left. They should make Abreu versus Vasquez just to kind of take one of them out of the discussion. But, you know, eventually, I mean, I think somebody like Mikey Garcia, that's what we're going to see. I mean, Vasquez has been on HBO a couple times. I think Garcia is probably going to fight Gamboa. But assuming that, you know, the seeds hold up, I mean, those are the kind of matchups we'll have to see. And if you're a great fighter, then you should, you know, Vasquez is not, you know, Vasquez should be beatable. He's very, very good, but he's not elite.
I think I realize why I don't like him, and it's not fair. I'll just say it real quick. It's not fair why I don't like him, because I like people like Sergio Mora. But Vasquez looks exactly like the villain in the movie Ghost. Remember Willy Lopez? That movie gave me nightmares the first time I saw it with Swayze and Whoopi Goldberg and Demi Moore. And, yeah, it just hit me at a wrong time and really gave me some nightmares. And he looks exactly like him, so it's just resurfacing some stuff inside me.
Is that Swayze's boy who, like, he worked with who tries to steal more after he dies?
No, that's the dude that they...
No, the guy he hired.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, that guy doesn't look like Vasquez.
No, the hitman he hired that met Swayze in the alley and killed him.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in so long.
Oh,
I'll Google image that, and I'll have Bag make a, you know.
Well, I just like doing pottery, so I watch that movie about once a year just in case. But I think that, James, I think that you brought up a really good point, though, and not to kind of, like, you know, piggyback that shit onto a half-hour discussion, but it reminded me of kind of like the other night when I was listening to The Boxing Voice, you know, quick plug to my boys over there, but they were talking about the Carlos Molina versus Twin Charlo fight, and one of the guys had said, I don't remember who it was, but they had said, oh, I really hope Carlos Molina doesn't hug his way to a decision. I really hate it, and blah, 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 and, you know, while that's a decent point and it's fair, you know, you cannot like that style and that's okay. But at the same time, kind of like you said, then it's up to the other fighter to do something about it. You know, and on top of that, Carlos Molina and even Miguel Vasquez and guys like that, they're not necessarily doing anything illegal. You know, I think that Carlos Molina is holding, especially like in the Kirkland fight when there was a video, a clinch count video made and all this type of shit, blown out of proportion, regardless. Yeah. Point is, yeah, I think that that's a really good point that you brought up about, you know, somebody having to do something about it if they really want to.
What was your other fight?
The other fight was Ricky Burns versus Terrence Bud Crawford. What are the thoughts on there? Because I think that that's
also lightweight division. So that's a potential, you know, another one of the belts there.
Is this fucking screwed? Because Crawford was on HBO in fights that we shouldn't have seen in feature spots, and now this is a fight I really care about. And what is it on? Like Wealth or something?
It's on whatever that website is where that has the streams on it.
Oh man! Like I mean,
it's Sky Sports, but it's also going to be on. I think what Wealth now is. I can't remember what the name for Wealth
A-W-E.
Is now, but it's
Aw.
It's going to be on there,
all inspiring. I like this fight a lot. I don't trust that Crawford can get a clean shake for some reason with the scorecards out there. And I know I say that a lot, so maybe I have conspiracy issue theories, problems. But I like this matchup a lot. I think Crawford should completely outclass him, though. Because, you know, good old Rick, he looked too good in that last fight. I remember, was it the last fight or the fight before when he got completely bailed out when the guy quit on his stool? Who did he fight? Was it Gonzalez?
Fight. And the fight before that was against Beltran, which probably most of us thought Beltran should have won.
I think this is a perfect showcase for Crawford to take that big step forward and really show us. Because I think he's the goods. I really do. I thought he was awful in his last fight that he didn't step on the gas when he had such an inferior opponent in front of him, and it was just a brutal fight. But I think that his ability as a slick boxer, he should just dominate Burns. But how could you not, you know, Beltran is a big example, not be a little sketchy that he's not going to get out of there with a fair shake if the fight is in any way close?
Pretty sick if lightweight the four belts are held by Abreu, Vasquez, Crawford, and Gamboa.
Yeah, that's kind of rough, needless to say. But
not really Corrales Castillo for lightweight supremacy.
Yeah, not really. Yeah, we could use a couple of, like, you know, Juan Lescanos or something like that in there right now. But
I mean, I think that you bring up a pretty decent point, and probably the point that most people are feeling, you know, going into that fight is, and that is, you know, how do we really give Crawford a fair shake? I think that he's got to kind of get the knockout or something along those lines to really win that fight, because I thought that Ray Beltran won that fight against Ricky Burns, like, you know, pretty clearly myself, but... Yeah, I don't know. It's not that Ricky Burns is a bad guy. He's not a bad fighter. He doesn't have a terrible style or anything like that, but I just don't really feel like he's quite on the level that he should be for, I guess, holding a belt, whatever importance you want to assign, you know, a belt. Regardless, yeah, I think that's the question. Is Terrence Crawford going to get a fair shake? Because I'm thinking that he's going to be able to handle it.
Agreed.
Yeah, I see a big outclassing coming, because I think it's going to be much wider than what Beltran was able to do to him. So in the end, I don't think he's going to have a problem. Even if he gets halfway screwed, he'll still have enough points to win. Take that.
I'm looking at our boy Starks just sent the picture, the pictures of Willie Lopez and Vasquez. Good call, Brian.
Did it work, right? It didn't make me look like, yeah, it did work, yeah.
Yeah, I saw it, and I could see it in my head when you said it. That's why it was so hilarious. But yeah, that was a great call.
And Brian, very quickly, because I know we all got to run here, but just give us your take on my most anticipated fight, Sergio Martinez, Miguel Cotto.
Man, that's a good fight, dude. That fight, by the way, everybody in the world, fan, writer, famous people, anyone I know has said if that fight officially gets booked, I'm flying to New York for it, including
is
you.
Is Rosie going?
She has to go. She'll probably get to sit in the ring for that one. But
she's
man,
a judge.
Man, that fight.
She's got her judging license.
I sure hope she gets to sit in the ring for that one.
You know, I love star power. There's so much star power in this fight. It's at the Garden, and that still means something to me. That still means a lot to me. You know, like this is like an old-time boxing fight to me. I love that it's for the real middleweight title. I love the matchup. I think that if Sergio is recovered from the knee injury and is even 85% as he was in the Chavez fight, he's going to win a clean, fair decision. And we're not going to have a problem. But, hey, I know we can't drink the juice too much on what Miguel Cotto did against the guy from Friday Night Fights.
Delvin Rodriguez.
Against Delvin. You know, because it is what it is. But if he can commit to the body attack with that type of aggressiveness, we really could have a real fun fight in our hands. And obviously the Garden's going to be rocking for Cotto and lifting him up. Does he have one more of these breakthrough performances in him? I don't think so. I'm going Sergio, but I love everything about it.
What's your take on that one, Foley?
I have no idea. I mean, I'm going to think about it for a couple months. Sergio. I mean, I'm leaning Sergio for all the reasons that Brian said. I'm just worried that, you know, maybe he's a bit more, you know, off the cliff than I thought he was.
I think that's pretty much what the question is. Is he how far gone is he, if he is far gone? And if he's farther than I think, then I think that Cotto's got a real good shot. If not, like if we see, you know, Sergio Martinez in there, I don't really see Cotto winning the fight. I'd like to because I'm a Cotto fan, but I don't really see it.
Well, and how many gold chains will DiBella be wearing sitting at ringside?
Oh, and Samson, too. I want to talk to Samson, you know?
Is that
climbing
your boy?
To the moon like that bitch, Alex Brandon. Yeah.
Because it's hard being black and gifted.
I saw him. He is quite a you know, charismatic figure.
But I'm completely biased in the situation, and I think you can read that between the lines. I want to see Martinez Golovkin so bad, and I don't want to see Floyd Cotto for the middleweight title. So both of those do play a small factor into my decision, but I also live on the side of the fence that doesn't believe that Sergio's done and believes he just needs to heal.
You want your twin sons to see DiBella carrying Martinez's corpse out of the ring at when Golovkin stands there just triumphant.
I already ordered the white gloves so they can be pallbearers in that.
Oh,
I don't mean that. I don't mean that.
No, I know. And honestly, I like Sergio a lot. I think he's a lot of guy people give him shit, but I mean, I think, you know, even in the 12th round against Chavez, I thought he showed a ton of balls and heart just to stay up against this guy, you know, 180-pound monster.
He's a real man.
badly hurt him. Yeah, so I think for all Sergio's flamboyance and everything, I mean, I do think he's a fighter at heart, and it's got potential to be a great fight. You know, I think I could see them, you know, see a lot of exchanges.
Yeah,
and both
for
guys
sure.
have been hurt, so I think it's a really interesting fight. And like Brian said, I mean, two potentially big fights could come out of it, depending on who wins.
Yeah.
Best case scenario, I think, is Sergio wins a really competitive, you know, exciting fight, and then we get Sergio Golovkin and Cotto and Canelo.
Oh, so good for September. Well, maybe not September. I don't know. Maybe November. November. How about that?
One in each.
Yeah, that's so good. You know, we need these fights. We need stars to fight stars. I love everything about June 7th, and I hope you guys are going to be there. Be there, all right? Be there. Be there.
Well, a lot depends on this whole Padres thing, so I don't know. I'm kind of keeping my schedule open just in case. We'll see what happens. But we have like 30 seconds left, so let's bring this shit to a close. First of all, Mr. Campbell from ESPN, thank you so much for joining us again, because it was a lot of fun. And, yeah, we'll have you on again, definitely. We will
Thank you.
No, sorry, go ahead.
The pleasure is absolutely all mine. This is a joke for you to thank me. You're my guys. This has been a joy for me.
We'll probably be taking next week off just because the schedule is somewhat thin. But either way, catch my stuff on queensberryrules.com. Catch James Foley's stuff on badlefthook.com. And, of course, we're past the live time, but since I promised the sponsors I'd do this again, I'm just going to close it out with the movie.
Boxing is demons. And there exist many names for these demons. Press row predators. Boxing writing barbarians. Media monstrosities. They attend boxing cards, disguised as impartial observers, but lay in wait for their next helpless victim. Needless to say, boxing scribing just got real. Get ready to be slapped with the latest sensational boxing film to absolutely stun the Academy of Films about boxing writers who assault each other while covering fight cards. This summer, experience colossal titan of boxing media, Colossus Leviathan.
Take it easy, everybody.